We're actually on 1 and 30, but we have to go back a little bit where we were talking about the homosexuality last week and the lesbians and the homosexuals that Paul was pointing out. I told you that he doesn't leave anything out of the book of Romans. He didn't leave that out. I forgot to make up some... this is the culture of the Jews, all right? I'm sure that Paul knew all about this rabbinical sayings and everything that they had back then. Have you ever seen one of these? Any of them? Yeah, see, Paul? All right, the culture of the Jews. All right. That's, I'm going to put this on the camera so I can see it there.
Is that light reading, Jim?
What?
Is that light reading?
It's a lot of stuff. Anyway, how many of you have heard of Lilith? If you've been in my class, you've heard of Lilith over the years. Okay, I've made some comments on it over the years. I have never heard anybody else teach on it, pretty much, or about it. But I have read the Quran. I've read the Book of Mormon, the Pearl of Great Price, and the Doctrines and Covenants, and all of the Herbert Armstrong's writings, Jehovah's Witness stuff. When I teach about the subject, I study it. And so I can get it from their point of view and what the Bible says also. The culture's use, when you... there is so much in Judaism that comes in America today with teachers like Chuck Missler, okay, and David Hawking. A lot of the things that they bring into Christendom is out of Judaism, and it really isn't Bible. One of the things that is so common today that people have been carried away with is the young earth theory, that the earth is only so many years old. Now, if the Bible taught that, that would be fine, but the Bible doesn't teach that. And where they go wrong is, of course, Chuck Missler and David Hawking, is they studied the rabbis. The rabbis believe in evolution, basically, that the earth evolved from chaos into order, that God created chaos and then it came into order. I have got an hour and a half tape here that you can see the whole thing, and they talk about all of it. Well, this is one of those subjects here, Lilith is. Okay, Lilith. All right, you have one right out there. Now, according to the rabbinical writings, Lilith was the first lesbian. And who was she? Okay? All right, who was she? All right. Huh? Adam's first wife. In short, one of the legends presents as the main enemy of babies Adam's first wife, Lilith. Okay, Lilith. Whose jealousy of Eve drives her to kill the newborn and endanger its mother. And although Lilith is mentioned in the Bible only one time.
Where?
Aha! See, I knew you'd say that. Isaiah 34 and verse 14. All right. Lilith is mentioned in the Bible only once, Isaiah 34 and verse 14. All right, so is this exciting? Well, Isaiah 34 and verse. Now, it's not anything new to you, Randall, because you've heard me do this probably 5 years ago or something. I bring it up every now and then over the years. You can go into the sermon audio and look up, put Lilith in there, and you can go and hear me teach a whole class on it. I'm not going to do that tonight. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about it, since I'm sure the Apostle Paul didn't bring it out. He did not bring it out in the book of Romans because it's not foundational. But because it exists, I'm telling you about it. Okay? Randall, what do you got over there? Okay, have you, Cindy, have you got it, Cindy? Okay, go ahead. Could you read that for me, Cindy? Okay. It says it in the original language is the problem.
Uh-huh. You'll meet with the wolves. The hairy goat also will cry to his kind. Yes, the night monster will settle there and will
will find herself a resting place.
Let's look at it. Isaiah 34. I should have printed out from Hebrew for you, but I didn't think of it. 34 and verse 14. All right. The night monster in Hebrew is Lilith. Okay?
The which one?
The night monster. Okay? The desert creature shall meet with the wolves, the howlers is what it says in Hebrew, and the hairy goat, actually the hairy goat is demons. Okay? Demons. All right? Also shall cry. Now, if you go into the rabbinical writings, you're going to find out the legend of Lilith. This is where it is, okay? The hairy goat shall cry for its kind, and yes, the night monster Lilith shall settle there and shall find herself a resting place. All right. Lilith. On Brown, Driver, and Briggs, if you want to look up page 539, if you want to write that. That's right. Okay, there you go.
Lilith.
Brown, Driver, and Briggs, page 539, if you want to look it up. Okay? So, since we've gone over this, and I know that Paul didn't give a whole lot of to this legend of Lilith. He didn't mention it. He did mention the other problems. All right? Lilith was a demonic figure. It even was in the Arabic world. And the rabbinical writings, it says the Jewish legendary sources connect this demonic figure, who is known as Lilith, or Lilitu in ancient Babylonia and demonology, with the creation stories in Genesis. As the Bible and folklore scholars have noted, the first and second chapters of Genesis represent two different, even contradictory accounts of the creation of the world. Okay, one of them tells about the creation of the world and then how God reconstructed it. That's basically what happened. Of course, the Jews, now they have problems with this, because they believe God created a chaos and then brought it into order. The Bible, the Hebrew says God created order and brought it, and it was brought into chaos. All right? And therefore your Missler and your David Hawkins and all of them go off on that. The rabbis of old did, in fact, notice the difference between the two stories and attempting to solve the problem of simultaneous creation of man and woman in the first version, male and female. He created them, Genesis 1 and 27. They brought up the legend of the first Eve, who was parted from Adam, explaining that it was she who was created with Adam in the first chapter of Genesis, whereas Eve is the second Adam. All right, that's where you get all of this speculation. All right, but we need to be aware of it, because sometimes you're going to run into people, especially in literature, and they will say, "Where's Lilith?" And Lilith in the Bible. In the colleges, they talk about Lilith. Many times, anytime there are Jewish people there, they're going to know about Lilith. Okay, so now you've got an answer for it. Okay, you know who Lilith is. It won't be unknown to you. Did you ever hear about Lilith at all, Randall? I know you have. All right. Explaining that she is created with Adam in the first chapter, and the first Eve is identified as the ancient demon Lilith. And since she was created equal to Adam, she required equal rights, including, for example, to be positioned over him during intercourse. All right. This is all the Hebrewism. Okay? And and then you see, I gave you a little handout. Okay? Now today, and even for hundreds and thousands of years, this little diagram here goes all the way back into the 1700s. Okay? And in Germany, they had little amulets that they would hang around the women's necks, and they would put them in different rooms and everything to ward off. They thought that Lilith was going to all, you know, up until just... Well, in the 1800s, in the 1900s, and even in the 20th century, in the early 1900s, it was dangerous for a woman to have a baby. Do you know that? Many times they didn't. Sometimes a man would have three or four different wives because they died in childbirth. And a lot of children died. At this period of time, in the 1700s, the mortality rate was about 75%. Only a few people grew up. Not very many women died of old age. Okay, and so they had to have a reason for all of this childbirth, and they thought Lilith was a demon, and they would come in, and she was always trying to kill Adam's children, and even the second Adam, our own down to this day. And it talks about the amulets they'd hang around her neck and everything. Well, Paul didn't give much credence to that legend, so he didn't even write about Lilith at all. All right, so we don't have to worry about it, but I want you to be aware of that it does exist. Okay? Simple as it does exist, and that's who Lilith is. She's basically a fictional character that God created that was a Jew's idea. And when I taught the book of Genesis here, the book of Genesis, as the Jews created, Brother Randall, do you remember what it is? It's not a translation, but a what?
It's an interpretation.
They do not translate the Hebrew Scriptures, they interpret them. And there's your problem. You translate them and let the Scriptures, you've translated as the verbs and the tenses do. That's why we're studying Greek. You know, when you go back to the original language, it cuts through all this baloney. And you don't have to worry about Lilith and about a young earth and how God created chaos, because God didn't create chaos. He creates order, doesn't he? Adam was perfect when he created him, wasn't he? And then he became disordered. Well, yeah, Lucifer was definitely perfect when God created him. And he became horrible.
Isaiah 14, 12 through 15, Ezekiel 28.
We see it there. Now let's get on with our Greek studies. And maybe it'll give you a little bit more initiation into to learning Greek, because when you can learn the original languages, it cuts through all the baloney sometimes. One in verse 30. Kata lalus. Theos tigies. Hebristos. Hiper ephanus. Alazonos. Eferetos. Kakon. Konusian. Apethes. All right. That last word, apathes, it means unpersuaded or disobedient. The Jews say that Lilith was disobedient, that she was very aggressive. And when God created them two together, but God didn't create. God created man and woman in one person, and then he divided Eve, and he took from his sides, not a rib, but from Adam's sides, he took Eve, and Eve, actually, Eve is, it means living, all right? He took woman, Isha, out of Ishman. And that's how the creation was. And the Hebrew Bible states it very plainly. Chapter 1 makes a statement, chapter 2 explains what happened in chapter 1. And the Jews do that all the time. All right, now let's go back into this Psalm 5 and verse 5 and 2 Timothy 3 and 2. Go along with this. Down talkers. That's what the worst one is. Kata lalus. All right. There are different words for word in Greek, aren't there? Laleo. Okay. What is another one? Lego. All right. That means to speak. What's the Hebrew equivalent to this? The bar. Word. All right. What's another word? Remember what that one is? Biomer. Okay. Biomer. Biomer means to say. Okay, Dabar means a word that you put in a line. That's kind of like Lego. And Dabar is like Lego. And Vayomer or Yomer is like laleo. All right? And then we have another one. I know this isn't coming out very strong there. It's rail. Rail means to flow. Okay? It means an edict. All right, an edict. Laleo means to form with human speech. Somebody say, let's say, let's go. Say, let's go. Let's go. Okay? Now, you use a lot. Let's go. You use your tongue. You use your palate. You use your throat. All right? Let's go. That some of that came from way down in here. when you speak, how many of you ever heard Chinese people, Oriental speak? It sounds unusual, doesn't it? How about Greeks? Any of you ever heard a Greek speak? Anybody ever heard a Spanish? I mean, you hear all this kind of stuff and you wonder, how in the world are they making all those sounds? The word laleo means that you're using all the human forms to form words. Okay? Human speech. Lego means you're lining up one word in front of another. You're taking from your vocabulary in your head and lining those words up, and you're figuring out what you're going to say. So you line them up like the bar. Okay? And here we have Vayomer, and he said. Okay? All right. Kataleo, laleos, it means to use human form and speech and to talk somebody down, to slander them. Okay? To slander them. Slanderers, to talk back. James 4:11 and 1 Corinthians 12:20 also. And then theos tiges. All right? And what that means... Dio atibiles. It means God insulters. God insulters. Insulting God. Have you ever heard anybody insulting God? Why, you can probably listen on the radio, watch television, whatever. There's people stand up and say, if there's a God, strike me down. They'll insult God like that. Do something to me. If there's a God. Here's a God slanderers. God haters, spite, insulting to God, God insulters. And then hebristos, okay? That means insolent, to insult. 2 Samuel 10:4. It means to do evil for evil's sake, to be mean because you want to be mean. I remember one time I was watching Gunsmoke and old, what was his name? Marshall Dillon came up there. James Arness, he stood up. He said, I went to bed mean last night and I woke up meaner this morning. He was joking around, of course. But some people will sit there on their bed at nighttime just thinking all night long what evil, terrible thing that they can slander somebody with or do something for. That's what they think about. I had a stepdad one time. That man didn't sleep hardly at all tonight. He stayed up all night long scheming, figuring out how he could rip somebody off. Rip them off. Trying to figure out some way to plot and to plan and to cheat. All night long. Despiteful. Insolent. And then he eter ra fa noose. All right. This means to be, you ever know anybody stuck up, Dakota? You know any stuck up people? This means stuck up. It means haughty. It means arrogant. It means to, what it literally means is try to shine above everybody. To outshine them. Okay? Lucifer, the shining one. To outshine. That's what it literally means, to shine above. Arrogant, haughty. Alezonos. That means braggarts, arrogant, boasting, ostentatious. Means wandering, to wander. Go outside of the truth. when you're bragging, sometimes you go outside of the truth, don't you? Add a little more topping on there than what's real. Then we come to the word ephéretos. Ephéretos. It means, we get our word, the town of Eureka. Have you ever heard of Eureka? It comes right out of the Greek word eurisko, which means I found it. This means to seek and try to find evil things. The seekers of evil. Marilyn, you're laughing about this. Seekers of evil. Seekers of evil. Ones that want to seek out evil. Finders of evil. Finders of evil things. Kakon. Kakon. That means Adamically evil. This is something you're born with. You're born with the Adamic nature. We are born with Adamic nature, okay? We are just kind of bad because we're bad. Born that way. You don't have to teach a child how to lie. It just, you know, how does a little baby lie before it can even talk? How can a baby lie? Cry and want attention when it really doesn't need it. It's just very, very selfish. And it doesn't have a wet diaper. It's not hungry. It's just going to cry because it wants attention. So it's lying to you. I had a little chihuahua dog one time. And Poncho was his name. And that dog would trick me. He was a character, smart as a whip. He was 37 years old, I think, when he died. And I had to have him put to sleep. He had a stroke and he couldn't eat anymore or anything, but he was still with us. Old Poncho. I would be studying, and sometimes I would be studying for many hours, studying Greek and chasing Greek and Latin words and Hebrew and all that kind of stuff, and I'd be going, and that dog would come in there. If he wanted to go outside and go to the bathroom, he'd come up there, and he'd run around a little circle and bounce around like Splashy, you know, and then aim toward the door. He'd do this. He'd run around, and if you didn't pay attention, he'd jump up and hit you on the leg with his front feet, just like that, bump you a little bit. If somebody was around at nighttime, you were asleep, he'd jump up and hit your bed until you got up out of the bed. If somebody was really there. He'd bark a little bit otherwise. But anyway, Poncho would come in there when I studied, and I didn't want to get up. But I knew I better get up and let that dog out, or else I was going to have problems. Well, I get in there, and here's my study, and here's a big living room there, and there's a hallway, and over here to the right is the kitchen. He'd get me up, and I'd go through the living room and get over there, and then when he'd come over there to the kitchen, he'd take a dive to the right. He just wanted to get me up, because there was goodies in there, and he wanted a goodie. And then he'd go look up there at the place where the goodies were and bounce around like that. And he got me up now, so I'd give him a goodie, and then I'd make him go outside. Now, this word, hebristos, is only used two times in the New Testament. 1 Timothy 1 and 13 and here. All right, Paul's using some very, matter of fact, he's even in inventing words. All right. Inventing words. Asinthetos. Astorgeis. Or storgus, that is. Okay. Aneleimenos. Monos. When I try to say these things slower, they don't come out right. Asinthetos. All right. Every one of these has got a negative on the front of it. Have you noticed that? Athanatus. This means not able to put things together. Reckless. Have you ever seen anybody drive reckless? Huh? My wife, when we come all the way from out there, halfway to Los Angeles, where we come from, we're out there by Barron Mountain Boulevard, we get on the freeway, and I mean coming through all this way to Bakersfield, my wife keeps saying all the time, she said, there's no reason, there's no wonder they need to have law officers on the road to stop these people. They're wild outlaws driving on the highways. Senseless. Undiscernible. These people can't put things together. They can't understand. They're senseless. Sometimes people that know better are just reckless and perverse, aren't they? That's all in that word there. Asthenetos. That means faithless. It comes from alpha, seen, and tethemi, which means it means faithless. That's what we have down there. But what it means is untrustworthy. It means people that will not, they will sign their name on a contract and don't mean no way in this world that they're going to ever pay or keep faith with that contract. The American Indians, when they started dealing with the Anglo-Saxons, when they came from Europe, they took a pipe and they would pray and ask God's blessing on whatever contract they were going to make. And I'm going to tell you something, for hundreds of years, they wouldn't break the treaty. For 1,000 years, they wouldn't go and break the treaty because God was their witness. And one time here in the San Joaquin Valley, they had run all the Indians out of the valley and run them back up to the hills, you know, because they wanted to farm the land down there, so they had to run them all. Ran them back up into these other areas, and those Indians were up there starving to death. And they said, why don't you go out there and hunt or fish like the other guys? Well, our fathers made a covenant with these people, a treaty with them, many years ago, and we said we'd never hunt on their land. So we can't do that. Well, they're dead. Yeah, but God's not. God was there. I remember one time I had a service station on 3031 Edison Highway a long time ago. And I had a guy coming there. I knew this guy. He was going to go. How many of you remember Cal Worthington on television? Remember Cal Worthington? Eat a bug, stand on his head, do all this kind of stuff, you know, to sell you a car. Old Cal Worthington. Well, this guy's name was Calvin also. Calvin Worthington and this other guy named Calvin. Calvin said he's going to go down there and buy him a brand new Dodge Duster. He said, I'm going to bring it and drive it, and then I'm going to just not pay, make a payment over it, not one payment. And he didn't. That's this term right here, faithless. That man planned on cheating this guy. He went and drove that car in the ground, took the brand new tires off of it and sold them to somebody. He brought them down there and I had to take them off and stuff like this. I said, you know, Calvin, I said, this isn't right. I don't care. That's the word right there. Asthenetos. Faithless. Perverse. They don't plan on keeping a covenant or a contract at all. Never did. And then we have the word astorgos. That's used 2 times in the New Testament. This word astorgos there. How many of you know the different words for love in Greek? Different ones? What do you know what one of them means?
Agape.
Okay. Agapeo.
Yeah,
see if I can get this thing working. Nothing works. Nothing works. All right. Boy. Maybe I need a new eraser. We have the agapeo. Our agape, okay. Agape?
Yeah.
What kind of love is that?
That's godly love.
This is godly love. This is it means a sacrificial love, okay? Sacrificial. Now, I read a book one time that said it didn't say that because those Jews said they loved the praise of men more than they did God. Well, I'm going to tell you something, how much they loved it, the praise of men. They died for it. Eternally died for it. So they did sacrificially love it, didn't they? Yes, they did. All right. It means to lay your life down for. That's what the word agapeo means. And how about this word here? We got our word, a word right out of English from this.
Is it eros?
No. This is philo. That means I like. Philo, friend. Like. Philo. Philadelphia. All right. Philo, Philadelphia. We got a, back there in the East Coast, we got a Philadelphia, don't we? Comes from Philo. All right. Philo means friend. That's your friend. There in the Gospel according to John. Now, this is really neat. Okay, if you haven't seen this one before.
when Jesus went out there and went fishing, you know, the guys after the disciples, all, you know, Jesus died on the cross of Calvary. They went fishing on the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus went out there and he asked Peter something three times. Huh? He said, "Do you agapeo me?" And he said, "You know I like you." That's what he kept telling. He wouldn't say he loved him. I don't know whether Peter thought he was worthy of saying, "I love you," like that, because you know, remember the night, not too much time before this, he said, "I will die for you." Agapeo, love. And then he denied him. She said, "Before the cock crows three times, you're going to deny me. Or before the cock crows twice, you're going to deny me three times." And by the way, not very many people know this, but roosters are God's clock. Roosters crow at 6, 9, 12, and 3 regularly. Did you know that?
What are they doing
today? They don't make no difference. They're going to crow according to the clock. God's clock. They don't change because they like saving time. You just go out there and they're going to crow at 12, 3, 6, and 9, 24 hours a day. So what Jesus told him, he said, between 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning, you're going to deny me three times. As simple as that. And back then, now we have forgotten God's alarm clock, the roosters. We've forgotten. Period. And we lose what it says there in those Gospels. But Jesus told Peter, "Do you agapeo me? Do you love me sacrificially?" And Peter said, "I like you." And then he asked him again, "Peter, do you agapeo love me?" And Peter said what? "I like you." And then Jesus, the last time, this is what really made Peter upset. He said, "Peter, do you even phileo me?" Phileo? Philo?
He even questioned
his friendship. He said, "Am I your friend? Am I even your friend?" We have agapeo, we have philo. All right? And then we have eros, don't we?
Yes.
Eros. Eros. And what does eros mean?
Erotic.
That we got our word erotic from, which means sexual desire. It means you, this is where you fall in lust. You fall in lust with somebody, okay? And then we have the word here. Storge. 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 That means you love somebody as your sister or brother. Family love.
Storge.
This is an unusual word in the New Testament. It's only used two times in the New Testament, and it means close family love, like your brothers, your sister, your mother, and your father. It's very akin to agape, because family usually will die for each other, won't they? Might be my like my family and shoot each other, but and they would shoot each other and die for each other too. I remember those Pauls in my family, man alive. They'd get out there and beat each other up, but if somebody's coming fighting one of them, I mean they'd be all right there to protect the person. Without natural family affection. They don't have any family. There is no family to them. They don't have any family covenant ties. No family ties. That's what that word means right there. Without family covenant ties. A mother that does not love her child, something's wrong. A father that does not love his child, something's messed up. But how much of that do we see in the world today? It's very common, isn't it? Heartless. Hard-hearted. That's all from this word. Ani le monos. Ani le monos. That means unmerciful, without mercy, No mercy. How often do you hear that in... I remember one time there was a movie came out with this karate guy, the Karate Kid or something like that, and he went over there and this was his bad guy there, and he said, "Get him, no mercy. Kill him, do whatever you have to do to win." But how much of the world is like that? Merciless. Mother and Brother Madden, I think I told some of you this. Go and listen to his sermon, Preparing for the Battlefield. It's the featured sermon on discovertheword.com and on sermon audio also. He was in the war. He killed a lot of people. My teacher, D.S. Madden, Dr. D.S. Madden. He was a sergeant major in the Army. And he killed people. That's what he did during the war. But there's times to be a killer of men, and there's times to show mercy. He had one guy with him, Moxagumbo. Moxagumbo was a killer. He showed no mercy. He killed. There was a German soldier, drug his crippled, paralyzed body up to the edge of a road, and they were on one side, and the Germans were on the other side, and the Germans were surrendering. Well, this guy pulled himself up there and put his chin on the blacktop. I remember Brother Hubbard telling, or not Hubbard, but Madden telling me this several times. He put his head on the blacktop like that, and he looked up there, and he looked at Brother Madden with a pitiful face, and he said, "Comrade, help me." Moxagumbo took his .45 and shot him right in the head and killed him. No mercy. Brother Madden turned around with his Thompson machine gun, stuck that thing underneath his chin, and he said, "Moxagumbo, if you were worth one of these bullets, I'd pull the trigger." He said, "That man was no threat to us. At all." Unmerciful. Outlaws. This is what you call outlaws. There's a lot of outlaws. This is a terrible picture of the effects of sin in the lives of mankind. Oitenes. Hoitenes. You have to say that with a hard breather. All right? Rough breather. Hoitenes. To the kai oma tu theu epi nontes. Hote. Hoi. See that rough breather on hoi there? Ta. Toyata. Prosontes. Oxioi, Donatu, Hasten, Ooh. See, now that's a smooth breather on that, so we just say ooh. Otherwise, it'd be who, not ooh. Okay, ooh. Monon, Alta, and look on Alta. That is a smooth breather, okay? Not a rough breather. It's not Alta, but Alta. And then Poi, Usen, Allah. Hi, seen, udo, ko, or kusin. Seen, udo, kusin. Toys, prisusin. All right, let's go back and look at this. This is the last verse in the first chapter. We got it, finally. You know what? There is a whole lot here. Did you know there was this much stuff in this book? It's something else. Who are the ones, nominee, plural, masculine, relative pronoun, the ones, the ordinances or the decrees are the, where's that word, the bar, the decrees of God, the rao, that we, a rao is a decree, it's a flown out decree, an edict. All right? The ones, the ordinances, decrees of the God, having known. Now they had the word of God in their hands. The complete Word of God in their hands. Okay? We're going to talk about these people. Those who know to do good and what? Do it not. The ones, the ordinance of the God, having known. Second aorist. Nominee plural masculine. Second aorist participle active. The ones having known that the ones the such practicing habitually worthy of death. Now, Marilyn had a grandpa. He was an unusual guy. His name was what?
Which one?
Your grandpa, the one from Missouri, the state of Missouri. Elisha.
William Reed.
William Reed. All right. This guy, he was a tough guy. He was an outspoken guy and everything else. And if he didn't like somebody, he didn't like him and he'd tell him about it. But he didn't like you to like him either. How's that, Marilyn?
Well, if he didn't like anybody, he didn't like the one that liked him.
That's right. Now, this is just about what's... This is the saying right here. This is what's going on. All right? Who the ordinance of the God, having known that the ones, the such things, practicing habitually. Nominative, plural, masculine, present, participle, acting, practicing habitually, as a practice, worthy of death. They are. Not only them they do, but also they approve the ones practicing habitually, daily. Let me bring it. Randall, do you have an Amplified Bible? Okay. I'll go back and look at this as we go. You look that up in the Amplified Bible. Who are the ordinances and decrees of the God, having known, and the ones of such things... practicing worthy of death. Now, we're talking about everything that happened in the early part of this chapter, aren't we? All these rats, all the scoundrels, all the outlaws, all of the perverts and everything else that we have in the whole first chapter now. The worthy of death, oxioi, worthy, ones worthy of death. Have you got it?
Verse 32?
Yeah, verse 32.
Though they are fully aware of God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve to die. They not only do them themselves, but approve and applaud others who practice them.
All right. Like Marilyn's old grandpa. I mean, I don't like them, and I don't like them that like them. All right. Worthy of death they are. Not only them that they do, but also those that applaud, consent to. They applaud. The ones practicing habitually those things. Boy. Now, God doesn't like that. God doesn't like this. He doesn't like it from the book of Genesis all the way to the book of Romans. He hadn't changed his mind. God does not have situation ethics. He doesn't change his mind over decades, over centuries, over millennia. What was bad in Genesis is still bad in Revelation. Okay. That's just the way it is. 2 and verse 1. Can anybody say that one there? That's pretty easy. Look just like it, almost like it is in English.
Deal.
Deal. And then anapologetos. Okay. A. O. Anthrope. Anybody say that next one?
Pos.
Ho. Krenon. En ho gar krenes ton heteron siaton kata krenes ta gar alta process ho krenon. All right. Because of this, because of which things, inexcusable. This word comes from no apology. Without able to make an apology or apologetics. We get our word apologetics from this word. It comes from a, apo, and logos. No apologies. There is no apologies, no excuse. You are old man. Old man, look at that. Vocative singular masculine. Old man. Oh, say oh. Oh. You ever hit your finger and say, oh, that's an onomatopoeic word. Did you know that? Onomatopoeic. It's something that just comes out. Oh, man. Did Jesus ever use this term? This onomatopoeic term?
Oh, Jerusalem, oh, Jerusalem, how many times I would have plucked to you and you would not come. He used a farm term right there. He's like a little, like a hen does her chickens. If you can go out there, and chickens, baby chickens, their ears are attuned to their mother's clicks. And when they do like that, I mean, they come running just right now. It's either danger or something good to eat. And they'll run right there with mama. He said, I clucked to you, but you would not come. You would not listen to me. Oh, man. Oh, Jerusalem, oh, Jerusalem. How many times I would have clucked to you, but you would not come. Tos ho krinon. Every the one. All right, how do you say that in Hebrew? You remember? Huh? Call. That's right. Call in Hebrew. Tos in Greek. All right. I give you a little Hebrew and a little Greek too. Okay. Every the one. Every the one judging. Nominative, singular, masculine, present, participle, active. It's a continuous thing. The one judging. In, that's the preposition, page 137, if you want to write that down. What? For? Have you still got the Amplified Bible looked up there? Okay, I'm getting you ready. Okay? And what for? The what for? You ever heard somebody giving somebody the what for? That's about what it says right here. And what for ye judge? Second person singular, present, indicative, active. OSA, OMINATA, UCA, that's the conjunction of the present, indicative, active, okay? OSA, OMINATA, UCA, okay? You judge the other, heteron. We get our word heterosexual from that. Heterosexual, that means different sex, all right? Heter, different. The other man, yourself, theaton, looking reflexive, pronominal adjective there. The other, yourself, you judge or condemn or you hand down judgment. Second person singular, present indicative active, kata and krino. Ta, for the same things you practice, prason as a daily habit. Second person singular, present indicative acting, praso. The one judging. Alright, the one judging. Ho there is a definite article. It's nominative, singular, masculine, isn't it? And then we know that that definite article is a pointer, like a sign, like an arrow, pointing that away. And what it's describing, now this is a little shortcut for you, okay? Since that's nominative, singular, and masculine, definite article, then we know, first of all, the present part, the participle that we're looking there is going to be nominative, singular, masculine, isn't it? All right? Because that tells you right off. There's some way to indicate it. Present participle active, nominative, singular, masculine. Now, Brother Randall, what do you have there?
Therefore, you have no excuse or defense or justification, O man. Whoever you are who judges and condemns another, for in posing as judge and passing sentence on another, you condemn yourself, because you who judge are habitually practicing the very same things that you censor and denounce.
That's quite an explanation of it, but that's what all those Greek words say. Romans 14:22, Romans 1:20, 2 and 3, 9 and 20, Luke 12:14, Luke 6:37, 2 Samuel 12:5-7, Matthew 7:1. These are all cross references to this. All right. By the way, that word "dio" there, it comes from "dia" and "ho." It's a contraction of "dia" and "ho." Because of this or wherefore, because of this thing or because of which thing. Okay. 2 and verse 2 now. We're moving around a little faster. All these bad dudes, we know all about them because we run into these guys every day, don't we? We got a description. This Bakersfield, California. That's Romans 2 and 1. And the whole Romans first chapter, actually. Oi da men. What's the next one? They. Hote? Tol? Krima? Tu? Theu? Heston. Marilyn, you're doing great. You got A-plus for tonight. Tata? Aletheon? Epi? Tus? Ta? Toyata? Prasontos? All right, now let's go back and look at these words. Just keep that. Can you make that thing stay there? It's not like opening the book, is it? No? Yeah. Okay. We thoroughly, spiritually understand and see with our mind's eye. Like on a surround sound, what they call three-dimensional, 3D. Is that what these new movies are now, 3D? Well, actually, they're not new. We had 3D with those little glasses on back in yonder years, back there in the 50s and 60s, didn't we? Yeah. We know thoroughly and see with our mind's eye, first person plural, perfect tense, perfect tense. We have known thoroughly. We understand this in and out, up and down and sideways and through quite off. We see with our mind's eye. We understand it in 3D and full surround sound. Day, weak adversative conjunctive particle. Hote, another conjunction. Ta, or tol, krima, the judgment of the God. We all know what the judgment of God is. If you've read Genesis up to Romans, God has not changed His standards anywhere, has He? The only one thing in the New Testament when we come to is we find out there's forgiveness of sins, not through some animal dying, but through God dying on the cross of Calvary. He tasted death for us. He didn't stay dead either, did He? The judgment of the God is according to truth, Aletheia. I've told you before the name Aletheia, the woman's name means truthful or truth. Aletheon, epitus ta toi ata prosontes. The God is according to truth upon the ones the such things practicing habitually. Accusative plural masculine. God's judgment is upon them. Accusative plural masculine. Present participle active. Brother Randall, now read that for me in that Amplified Bible 2 and 2. If you would, please.
But we know that the judgment, adverse verdict, sentence of God falls justly and in accordance with truth upon those who practice such things.
All right. I told you earlier in the Romans, the first chapter, that people are judged according to what revelation they have. They are judged. God is just. He judges people according to revelation. Where is the strongest judgment going to come? Huh?
On people.
Where is God? Where is the judgment going to begin? Where did the judgment begin? Where did the judgment begin? Go back in time. Whoever was the administrator of God's kingdom in the time was judged the strongest. What happened to Adam? All right. What happened? Here, human government. Promise. Abraham, all the way down through here. What happened all the way here? What happened here at the end of the law age? When did the law age end, by the way? Anybody tell me when the age of the law ended? What ended the law?
When Jesus fulfilled it.
Not quite. The law and the prophets were until John the Baptist. They finished their purpose. The law was supposed to point Israel to their Messiah King, the substitute. The whole book of Ruth is about the substitutionary kinsman redeemer. The law and the prophets were until John, and then, here's what? The preaching of the kingdom of God. Because the king was here. When did the king take over the reins of his kingdom? When he warred into, when he rode into Jerusalem on the donkey. I'm going to preach on the 49th chapter of the book of Genesis one day. The whole history of Israel is there in the 49th chapter of Genesis. It's beautiful. Unbelievable. I've been jumping up and down. I finished writing the book of Genesis in Hebrew, and I'm in the 50th chapter right now. But I had a ball in the 49th chapter. I'm going to tell you, translating that and doing the commentary on it. I had a ball on it. I'm almost finished with Genesis. Just a moment ago, that little onomatopoeic word, Old Jerusalem, Old Jerusalem, how many times I would have clucked and you would not come to me, you wouldn't listen. And then he looked over there to the city of Jerusalem and he said, not too many years from now what? There won't be one stone left upon another. Israel judged herself. The Pharisees. There wasn't enough laws in the law of Moses, so the Pharisees invented several more. What were some of the laws that the Pharisees invented?
How far you could walk on the Sabbath.
Well, that was in the law to some extent, but they added to it.
You couldn't walk on grass.
You couldn't walk on grass on the Sabbath. That was from Friday night till Saturday afternoon. Saturday evening, six to six. You couldn't walk on the grass. Why couldn't you walk on the grass? Because you might sow some seed that was on the grass. Stupid. Just put stupid right over the front of their heads. You couldn't eat an egg that was laid on the Sabbath. Now, that wasn't the law of Moses. That's the rabbinical law. Okay? You couldn't talk to a woman in public. Not even your own wife. If you went shopping with your wife, you could not speak to her because that was obscene. That was terrible. That would make Marilyn, you wouldn't be happy at all, would you? You wouldn't have been a rabbi's wife. No way in the world. That's not going to happen. And then you go back and you see the rabbinical law. Do you know several times that they could legitimately stone Jesus according to their law? One of them that was there in the book of John when Jesus talked to the woman at the well. She said to him, she corrected him, she said, you talk to me, a woman? A Samaritan? And a woman? And then when his disciples come back, they were shocked that he spoke to a woman. This was flagrant, terrible, immoral character, according to the rabbis. But not according to the law of Moses. This was extra stuff. Boy, I'm going to tell you what, every one of those rats that invented those laws are going to be judged by them laws, plus God's. Every one of them. Their own law and God's laws. He said, those Pharisees, they bind burdens and they weight your backs down and they wouldn't lift them with what? With one little finger. But they're going to be judged according to their laws. And where did God begin the judgment? The dispersion, Ezekiel 36, 16 through 19. God, you know, Israel got dispersed a couple of times, didn't they? It's not over with yet. The judgment's not over. They got a great big one coming right here. They said, if I come in my Father's name, you would not believe me. But if another comes in his own name, you will believe him. That temple they're building over there, they're going to build right now, that so many Christian people are paying money to do, that's the Antichrist temple. Where Christianity is supporting the Antichrist temple. Just think about that for a while. Well, they are. All of these things going on in the world today, I mean, that's what's going on. Okay, just think about that one for a while. Churches are supporting the Antichrist temple. Okay? God's going to put the hammer on them right there. He's going to smash their fingers real good until they will holler, whoa! He said, you will not see me again until what? Baruch Hashem, blessed and holy is the name. He that came in the name of the Lord. All right? And even today, they've got these synagogues that are what we call messianic synagogues. Baruch Hashem. Blessed be the name. But I'm going to tell you something. God called out His church in this age. He set aside Israel for now. He set them aside. The administrators of God's kingdom in this world today is God's church, is not Israel. They lost the boat. They missed the boat, people. They missed the boat. They're cut off right now. The only thing Israel, the only reason why Israel exists today is because of the promise of God. And He's going to put them as administrators of the kingdom right here, but He's got to beat the tar out of them first. He's going to kill two out of every three of them, or have them killed. And they will serve Him for 1,000 years. They will. All right. Well, two and three is where we'll start next week. Two and three. This is the 17th, isn't it?
Yes.
Little, but when I started off today, or 1977 when I caught that the last time. Boy, that's a long time ago. Long spell, 1977. Thank you for your attention. I hope you are enjoying God's Word.